she hadn't, she'd have been able to tick me off for smoking at work, but she never was able to.
But, you know, one would have thought that Eleanor would have been a bit of a Puritan, really, with her background.
Well, she was a Puritan.
Was she? How? I got it on there. And not in spelling, anyway.
No, I don't. I think in lots of ways she was a Puritan, but she was a sort of breed that's... she was in line with Josephine Butler and these people who had great wealth. And, you know, they had this sort of feeling that was a responsibility and had to be used for the service of the community. It was almost inbred in her.
Some feeling of stewardship.
Yes. Yeah. And she had the same feeling about the British Empire, funnily enough.
Did she really?
Yes. I remember very well. A very little personal talk with Eleanor, but I remember very well Doris Hardman was
secretary,
and I were there, and she regarded us both as very young, and she said, well now, if you had a lot of money, where would you travel? We thought this out and we both said China, and she was so disappointed and shocked that we shouldn't go to India or one of the African countries which was part of the British Empire.
She
wasn't an imperialist. I mean,
no, she was proud of the Empire.
Well, she felt a responsibility, and a lot of her work was done. Yes. I worked for her. I think I better begin at the beginning in a minute.
Yes, I'll ask her. I'll get you
yes.
A
minute. I did. You see, money was short, and at one time my salary was largely paid by Eleanor.
Yes.
And therefore she felt able to use me as she needed me.
Yeah.
And one of the things she used me for, well, I was secretary of a thing called Committee for the... what was it called? To secure the franchise for Indian women.
Yes.
Now, Doris Hardman would know a lot about that.
Yes.
But I was, in that case, I was secretary. I was only a postbox. I think I wrote the minutes and sent out the notices, but absolutely nothing more. But on African women and the position of women in the colonies, I did quite a lot of research for her.
Did you really? Let's start at the beginning.
How I got the job now.
Yes, how did you get the job?
Well, that's a funny story, but I don't think it'll do you any good. I had been liberal organiser in Dundee for the 1929 election. They then offered me the job as secretary of the Scottish Young Liberals, which I did, and of course, looking back, I made the most awful mess of it, but at the time, what I did was to go from town to town and set up little young liberal organisations, marvellous on paper, and the liberal funds ran out, the Lloyd George funds completely, and they had to sack all organisers. And I'd always, not always, but I had been keen on family allowances since I read them a funny little paperback pamphlet with a picture of a woman bus conductor on it, I think. I mean, somebody did it. And I applied for this job.
It was advertised, wasn't it?
Yes, it was advertised. New Statesman, I think. And I applied for it, and I was interviewed. I bought an umbrella for the interview because I was very conscious of not being very well dressed or very respectable. I think an umbrella would sort of give me some status. So I was terrified. I was interviewed. I think Gilbert Murray was in the chair. Eleanor was there, and Mrs. Hubbock and Mrs. Ayrton Gould, and I still don't know. Can't remember quite. I didn't know them then, Mary Stocks. I got a list of the family endowment thing. As secretary of the Family Endowment Society. And the reason was that Eleanor had won her seat in Parliament for the combined universities.
In 1939?
Yes. Mm. She'd also got very involved in this question of Indian women's franchise. She felt she'd no time at all to give to family allowances. And the Family Endowment Society, the Family Endowment Society was run, to some extent, by two voluntary workers who'd been admirers of Eleanor, probably in the suffrage movement, I think in the suffrage movement, but it was a very low-profile thing. Eleanor did any publicity, and they wanted a secretary. Well, I applied for this job, and I was interviewed, and they said, I went out of the room, you know, or other things. Well, they'd let me know. I had to go back that afternoon and meet Eleanor in the House of Commons, and she'd let me know. Well, I wanted it very much. I don't think I was a very good interviewee. But how old I was, 24 or something. And I went into the House of Commons to meet Eleanor. And she came. Oh, I must tell you my first impressions of Eleanor in a minute. She came out and she said, it was in the lobby, and she said, well, I'm very sorry, Miss Green, but we think you're rather young and inexperienced for this job. And she was going on. And Sir Archibald Sinclair came up. Very charming, the Liberal chief at the time. Very charming. And he could interrupt without being rude. He said, oh, excuse me, Eleanor, just one moment. I don't want to disturb you, but I did want a word with Miss Green. He said, oh, don't go away. He said, I believe you're applying for another post, but we've just had a meeting of the Liberal Committee, and we've decided that the one exception is that we will pay your salary if you'll continue as organiser of the Scottish Young Liberals. That did it. And he offered me the job. I think it is partly a sort of Yorkshire, rather North Country idea that she was, you know, that she was in an auction. But there were two things there that distrust of youth to some extent at a time when people were rather idealizing young people and youth. There was a lot of talk about them. They never gave them much opportunity.
So they made you secretary?
They made me secretary, yes.
So what was
but
it?
But I must tell you, my shock at meeting Eleanor was, I didn't realise that I'd got a definite picture of her in my mind beforehand. A sort of, I think in my family, who were suffrage, they were keen on women's suffrage, hated the suffragettes, but I think there was a word then going, the shrieking sisterhood, mm-hmm. And I imagined her as sort of very, you wouldn't have seen Virginia Woolf ever.
I've seen photographs of her.
Yes, they were very like Virginia Woolf.
Tense.
Very tense and lean and emotional and large-eyed. Mm-hmm. Now you see this completely rather portly old lady, very motherly looking, beautiful white hair, lovely complexion, very nice eyes. But so unlike my idea of a feminist in those days. I don't think I'd ever met him.
Interesting, yes. That's one of her strengths in a way, isn't it? Because she doesn't look like a feminist.
No.
People can, men particularly, will do what she wants.
Yes, she... she wasn't very, I wouldn't say she was, I don't know how to put this, because her friends were doubtful. Mm. I think even to the end, whether it was right for her to go into Parliament. Mm. I mean, in my view, she was one of the very few creative brains. She was very good in Parliament. She was wonderful to have there. But she never got on terms with it. I mean, she wasn't like Lady Astor, for instance. I mean, I've seen her at a meeting next to Clyde Bank.
Oh, yes, people. Clyde Siders, yes.
Clyde Siders, yes. Clyde Siders, and she'd, at a committee meeting in the House, you see, where you don't usually sort of shout or interrupt, and she sort of screamed out something and interrupted, and she put his hand over her and said, "Wisht, lassie, wisht." And she did, you know. Yeah. And they're posed her, but they had a warm spot for her, and Ellen Wilkinson the same. But Eleanor, they'd run miles.
She was rather formidable.
She was formidable. And she was terrible. She was very conscious, I think Miss McAdam added to this, she was very conscious that she wasn't a social success. And
in the House, you mean? Or?
Well, generally, that it wasn't thin.
Oh.
And she was very shy.
Was she really?
Yes. And a bit awkward. I could understand her, because in a very sort of dwarf-like way, I was very like her. But she, how was I?
Well, anyway.
Oh yes, in the House. She was very persistent, and she put things. And I mean, one of the things that I learned, well, I just took for granted, I suppose, that was my training. I grew up in it. You had to be absolutely meticulous about facts and figures. I mean, she didn't rant. She just presented them with irrefutable logic, you see. And she was very much respected. And she was loved among the people who'd known her, among her old suffrage companions.
But how do you
not in the House. She didn't.
No, I was going to say, but how do you fit together this motherliness, which you noticed, with the fact that she wasn't a social success, really?
Well, I think she looked more motherly. Funnily enough, I've never seen her with children.
Mm.
But I think it was more a question of... she was an aloof, an intellectual woman. She wasn't sort of a North Country woman. She was sort of with her feet firmly on the ground, all her family allowances. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go, I can't see her in a modern Parliament. She wouldn't have got in, for one thing. Mm. And for another thing, she would never have obeyed a whip. You see, she was a woman, which of course I value very much now, not only of tremendous integrity, but of courage.
Mm.
And there were two things I remember in that connection. I don't know when it was, but there was the whole feminist movement was marshalling behind a silly debate. Well, it wasn't silly, but it was hopeless at the time, on equal pay.
That was 1936.
What was it?
Mm. Yes, I know.
1936 debate, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Eleanor, as far as I remember, voted against it.
Yes, she did. Well, yes. She abstained, I think, actually.
Did she? I couldn't remember which it was.
You're quite
she
right,
abstained,
anyway. She
yes.
was absolutely out on a limb. At
yes, she was time. Absolutely out on a limb.
And right, actually.
Yes. And it, I mean, she really had to suffer for that.
Did she really?
Well, not really, but I mean the sort of... She was cold-shouldered to some extent by the families. They didn't forgive her for a long time.
That's interesting, because I just recently read that debate.
Oh, yes.
Oh, just stand right out on
yes.
That.
Yes, and then again, she didn't want equal pay without family allowances.
That's right, yes. That's quite right. Yeah. I mean, everything's linked up logically in her mind.
Yes.
What was the other incident?
The other incident, she got a lot of criticism for. She had shares in... thought it was a Newcastle armaments, not Metro Vickers.
Armstrong Vickers.
Armstrong Vickers, I think.
Well, the armaments.
Yes, yeah, a big armaments thing. Mm. And when other people of like mind, and she worked a tremendous lot, that was her other, Indian Women and Peace, of course, were the two big things that she was working on. When other people were sort of selling out and refusing to have things, she stuck to them. And she stuck to them because she used to go to annual meetings and make a hell of a nuisance of herself and ask all good questions. Very good.
So she really only hung on to them for political reasons?
Yes.
But get back to the beginning, could we? You've got the job now.
Yes.
What did you have to do?
Oh, now, I couldn't know what I had to do, and I found Eleanor's testimonial, excuse me, and the Endowment Society, which was 1930 till halfway through, well, I suppose the end of 1939.
Yes.
A general responsible for planning and carrying out the research and propaganda activity of the Society on Family Allowance and Children's Rent Rebate. I collected and published information on family allowance schemes, both here and in other countries. Mm. So quite a lot of it was research. And we published, the only time I quarreled with Eleanor, we published a thing called the Family Endowment Chronicle, which was an absolute nightmare for me to sort of get out to, you know, it was monthly, and then I made it quarterly and so on. But
Where did you disagree with Eleanor on that then?
Well, this, you better put this off because I don't think it'll be of any interest. Like, it's just a nice story. I published this Family Endowment Chronicle, and it went out to a lot of universities.
Yes.
It was the Family Endowment Society was the only place in the world which was a centre of research on family allowances in France, and there was quite a lot going on, and all individual schemes and so on. And we used to get press cuttings and publish all, you know, any news from abroad on family allowances there. And then, of course, we had to fill also to have articles from people. Well, we had an article from the Archbishop of York Temple, and we had one from Mary Stocks, and Eleanor would write something, Mrs. Hubbard would write something. Well, you sort of ran out of them. And it was the time of the New Deal. So I did a long, long article, pages of it. It's one of the few things I've got left. All from press cuttings, I suppose, really embodying Eleanor's own principles and arguments in it. It's called A New Deal for Children, and it was a proposal of a sort of, on a Keynesian, or I don't think it was before Keynes, but it was that style, and not style, from that standpoint.
It's
a family allowance scheme in the States. And I thought, well, I can't sign it, Marjorie Greene. There's been so much Marjorie Greene. And I signed it, Hiram P. Pocklewater, I think. And I put the thing to bed, and I went to Switzerland with my father climbing. And a lovely holiday, came back, met by Miss Hardman. She said, my God, where have you been? I've been in Switzerland. What's the matter with you? He knew I was going to revolt. She said, there's been the most awful stramash. Eleanor read this article. She was terribly impressed with it. Well, she would be, of course, because it's all her own stuff. Rightly impressed. She got on to the American embassy. They were sure this frightfully erudite article must have been by an American professor. So the American embassy went round all the colleges and they couldn't find it. So Eleanor, in the course of her international feminist women of the world or something, I can't remember what, no.
International Women's Suffrage.
Yes, something like that. She'd met Frances Perkins, who was Minister of Labour in the United States then, under Roosevelt. So she sent a cable to Frances Perkins asking her to find Hiram P. Pocklewater, whatever his name was. The entire sort of diplomatic service and everything was put into operation and it couldn't be found. And Frances Perkins cabled back that she was most interested in the article and when they found Mr. Hiram P. Pocklewalker, she'd like to meet him. And of course, when I heard this, I just roared with laughter. I thought this was a wonderful joke. Well, I didn't think it was a joke at all.
So it was published in the end under your name, was it?
Oh, yes. No, it was published. Oh, no, it was published. You see, it was in print by that time.
I see. Well, no, when I see the Family Endowment Chronicle and the story behind that. But was she fun to work for, or was she a bit demanding?
Oh, she was demanding, yes. You know, you'd never call fun to work. But of course, frightfully interesting. And I think I'd been there about a month or more. And I worked terribly hard. I'd got articles in the Bradford something or other. There was a famous Labour Party paper in Bradford, I think Barbara Castle's father, I think, was editor of. Done a whole lot of articles on family now. I've done all sorts of things. And she saw me and said, well, I'm very sorry, Miss Green, but I don't think this is going to work out. I don't feel you're doing enough. And, you know, we'll sort of see what happens in another month.
Exactly, encourage you.
No, well, I was very. I always have been rather bad at putting all my goods in the shop window. I don't mean that I don't do it. I mean that I do it badly when I do it. I just sort of come out straight and say I was responsible for that. You see, I can't sort of insinuate as some people can.
Yes, I see, yes.
And Mrs. Hubbock, I've always remembered this with great gratitude. She told me that when she was made parliamentary secretary at the National Union, the same thing had happened to her.
Did she know?
Yes. Eleanor was sort of conservative in a way about people, you know, it took a bit of time. And then I had correspondence in the Manchester. I'd never written a letter to the papers before, but something came up. A letter from, I think it was Cramp, who was the National Union of Railway Men. And I replied to it. And then someone told me, oh, you must answer him back. I said, well, he's written, I've written, he's written again, he's got to stop. He said, oh, no, you must write him back. And he wrote a letter which he said that he, you know, that he'd practically no chance against an experienced polemicist like Mr. M.E. Green. And I was terribly pleased about it. Eleanor had a friend from the old suffrage days, Mrs. Mott in Liverpool, married to Professor Mott, who was, or even Eleanor was rather alarmed at her. She was so critical, so hard to please, and Mrs. Mott wrote congratulating Eleanor on this correspondence, and I stayed.
So you stayed?
Yes.
So what did you have to do? Did you go to her house, or how did
you... Oh, no. We had an office in Addington Street, which is no more. It's just opposite the House of Lords. One room. No typist. I said I could type a little, which I couldn't. I mean, I could just do it with one finger, which made things a bit difficult. It was the office where part of the offices that Lloyd George had at the end of the war that had wonderful cupboards where the Treaty of Versailles used to be stored.
So it was just literally a sort of little base, really.
Yes.
So it wasn't there weren't any committee rooms.
No,
or
no.
Anything grand.
Oh no, there's one office and one person, which was me. We did have at that time two organisers going about the country. Eleanor had done. Now, this is a funny thing about Eleanor. You never could tell. Well, yes, you could tell. But it's surprising who she went down well with. Her own constituency, a meeting of graduates, they talked the same language. She was wonderful. She was a very popular member. I mean, people that didn't agree with her politics would vote for Eleanor. She was good. She was wonderful. But a sort of middle-class audience, sometimes she could get away with it, and sometimes she couldn't. She varied in her speaking. But she went down extremely well with the miners. And she did the miners, you know, the miners and the cotton workers were the two unions, big unions, that were in favour of family allowances.
Why was that actually?
Well, both, I think, because they were in such straits.
Yes, yes.
And the
they have any sort of work.
Yes. The was it the Samuel Commission?
Yes.
I can't remember whether it was the Samuel Commission or some other Sankey Commission. One of the mining commissions recommended Beveridge had a...
Yes.
Yes.
In you mean in 44?
No, long before that. In the, I think
he had
Beveridge
a private scheme at the LSE, didn't he?
Oh, yes, yes, he had that. Well, at any rate, Eleanor went round just before my time, talking to miners' lodges and taken round by Mrs. Freeth, who I think really is lost in the sands of time, who was a jolly good organiser. Used to get on well with the trade unions.
Mrs. Freeth was a working woman, was she, or not?
Well, she was not quite working, no, a sort of lower middle class. Not
how do you spell it?
F-R-E-E-T-H. And the thing about Mrs. Freeth was that she was very unimpressive. She, again, was rather a stout sort of lady. Not at all interesting to talk to. She wrote the most wonderful reports, I can't think where they are, but detailed reports which were good reading. It was wonderful.
Of her tours?
Yes, of her tours. You'll have Mrs. Freeth's report about going round with Eleanor. There'd be something, but I don't think you will. At any rate, she was a very great
success. So she was one of the two organisers.
Yes.
Mrs. Freeth. Who was the other one then?
Well, I've forgotten her name. She was in Edinburgh, didn't get on so well. She was only part-time. She'd been an old suffrage worker, I think.
Yeah.
But Mrs. Freeth was a splendid woman. You had to look at her reports and get anything out that was interesting. Then send literature to people and make suggestions, really organise her, of course, where she went and what we were doing.
Right.
And you see, family allowances, of course, it was all a marvellous training in a way, because there were so many schemes. There was not only the foreign side of it and the research side of it. but also the there was the constant fight with the Labour Party about the national scheme for family allowances. Then there were schemes for we fought very hard to get a scheme for the teaching profession and put in evidence the Burden Committee. And that, if I may say so off the record, it was rather an illustration of Eleanor. Lord Burnham, she told me, said that this was the... He wrote to her, I think, and said that this was the best presentation of a case that the Burnham Committee had ever had. And old Eleanor, of course Mrs. Hubbard would not have done anything, old Eleanor rocks back immediately and says that it wasn't hers.
I see.
You know, she was...
She gave credit then.
Oh, yes, and embarrassingly, I went to the celebration that they had in 1946. Mm-hmm. Griffiths was there.
Oh, yes.
Passing the family, they had something in the Dorchester.
Yes.
Mrs. Hubbard asked me down, and I went and sat in the audience, and it was really in honour of Eleanor, you see, and Eleanor spoke, and that was lauded. And she got up and said, well, it's awfully nice to say all these things, but really she'd done very little about it. It was all due to Miss Green, who was in the audience. Well, of course it was a terribly nice offer, but of course quite the wrong thing to say somehow.
Yes,
it was rather awkward.
Yes. She'd written the book, of course, of dissent.
Yes. You see, another thing was that she used to ghost her articles, and I used to have such a struggle to let me put her... I mean, I'd never do anything with Eleanor without showing them to her, and I mean, she'd make any small corrections, but it was such a struggle to let me do it. You know, she thought, well, it was dishonest, and she
you
was
mean
getting...
alterations to somebody else's?
No, I mean, I wrote the articles.
Yes.
And I want... The only way I wouldn't have gotten published properly. The only way to get them under her name.
I understand.
And there was nothing dishonest about it, because, I mean, all the ideas were hers. I mean...
That's interesting.
But she was most reluctant, most reluctant to do it.
Was she hardworking? Did she drive herself?
Oh, terribly hardworking. She didn't remember whether she'd had a meal or not. Look, she's frightfully absent-minded.
Was she really?
Yes. When the... I'm sorry, I'm not doing this in order
exactly
at all.
What I want.
I can't remember when the next election was.
Well, 1931, then 35. Then
35 it would be, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I think it was because I'd had a bit of a shock. The girl that I was rather friendly and had the room next to me, Diggs, died of pneumonia. It was a miserable business because it was due to lack of nursing and so on. I was rather upset about it. And when she went up to Liverpool, as she did, to organise her election, Miss McCarroll, of course, went with her. And they asked me to come and stay in the house. Not because they wanted the house looking after anything, just to sort of give me a... Yes,
yeah.
In Romney Street. To give me a break, I suppose, and I could have my friends in dinner. And they had a cook and housekeeper with whom I was very friendly. And we had, who the devil was it? his name. There was a man that stood for Preston as a Liberal and became Labour overnight because the Labour Party needed an Attorney General. Oh, I can't remember the name of Jowett, but I'm sure it wasn't Jowett. Any rate, he was Sir somebody. Can't remember now. And he had the impertinence to come to Eleanor and ask her to stand down because he wanted to stand for that constituency in the government, felt it was important that he should get in as a law officer of the Crown. Oh, Eleanor really bristled over that. And he used to ring me up while they were away to ask me how it was going. He stood against her, I think. At any rate, she came back and she wanted to give her a present of some very nice Georgian silver tea service that had been the family for years to her niece or great-niece. Well, couldn't be found. It had been in the house and it had disappeared. Such a stramash. It was insured for I don't know how many hundreds. And the insurance company insisted on the police being brought in. The police came round. She first of all refused to let them talk to the maids. And I said, well, I didn't mind them talking to me, and I talked to Mrs. Wilson, the cook, and the parlour maid, and we got together, and we all agreed we'd have our thumbprints taken or anything that was necessary, and they did it. And I think the day that the insurance people had rung up and said that no trace had been found of this, and they were prepared to pay up, and they were writing to... Well, the same day, the Army and Navy stores rang up and said that when was Mrs. Strathbone going to collect her piece, which tea service, which had been sent in for. Oh, it was awful.
So she was absent-minded in big things?
Oh, yes, and she was always losing her pearls. She had beautiful two strings of pearls. She was always losing them in taxis. How are they ever? I mean, the police knew them well. She always got them back again.
But didn't she have a bag that she carried?
Oh, yes. Both she and Mrs. Havoc had enormous, I suppose they were nylon in those days, but some cheap sort of a bag. Well, may not have been. A huge bag stuffed full of books about family allowances and papers and letters. And everything was in the most frightful confusion. But I'm a bit like that, and I know how it is. But she somehow could... She didn't get confused at all. She got a very, very absolutely clear, logical mind.
So it's the same with Eva as with Eleanor, really, on that, because they're both very...
Both had these bags, yes.
Yes, it's interesting. Did they... What was their relationship, that those two actually...
Oh, they were very fond of each other.
Were they?
Greatly admired each other. But they were such a wonderful fit. I mean, Eva Hubbock, she'd got, I don't know what it is, but she'd got that sort of, a subject came up, and she said, oh yes, I'll ring up Sir George Newman about that, or something like that. Oh, I'll tell you, John Newman, I'll tell you about that. Or she'd ring up somebody. What about getting Leighton onto it? What about... She knew everybody. And she got on... I don't know how she could be persistent without seeming to be aggressive in some way. I think Eleanor made a great effort.
So she, if you look at the partnership, it's a very important partnership, actually.
Oh, very. You see, it was a partnership in everything. She, as you know, Mrs. Hubbock was doing the parliamentary work for the National Union at the same time that Eleanor was president. When Eleanor became a member of Parliament, I mean, it was a channel through which all the feminist pressure was put And it was interesting in those days, I'm sure much more than now, the women MPs stood together. And they'd meet together, and they'd go on deputations together. And I think it broke up about the time of the... Well, it broke up, of course, with Lady Astor, the Spanish Civil War, which they just were hardly on
some... The Duchess of Athol, of course, was on one side.
Yes.
But, so, if you look at the, what each contributes to the partnership, what Eva contributes is contacts.
Well, contacts and, well, more than that. I mean, that puts it too low. She was a strategist. She knew what to do. She could plan a thing. And she knew when to put pressure on. I can't remember whether it was Eva or Eleanor. I think it was Eleanor, though. That once said to me, which I've never forgotten, was, now, you've got to remember, there's no point in pushing an open door, and there's no point in banging your head against a closed one. You must husband your energies for something that's just a little bit open. And if, you see, they were so practical about it. I mean, if they knew that the government were preparing a bill on women police or something, they'd get in early and see that it was, they got it right
at the beginning. Right.
So, and then, yes, sorry, I'm at the Family Endowment Society.
No, following up what she was saying, so Eva does that side of it, the planning, the organising, the getting in touch with people and so on. What Eleanor does then is the thinking, is it?
Yes, and the leadership.
Yes, and being in Parliament to sound off.
Yes, I mean, we always had Eleanor as the Children's Nutrition Committee, and Eleanor was the chairman.
She was a sort of dignified figure.
Yes, and of course, I mean, well, it isn't true that I made it too specialised. She was also a planner and a strategist.
I understand. If you're trying to describe the relationship, then is Eva, is she a disciple? I mean, is she a junior to
well, she's junior. I don't think. You must look at her book, but... I mean, Diana's book, but I don't think that she was actually in the suffrage movement. I think she was young.
She was a bit young. I really wonder, talking about the quality of the relationship, really. Was she following on Eleanor, really, or was it an equal partnership in a way, do you think?
Well, it's funny. I never thought of it before, but I would think of Mary Stocks as a disciple of Eleanor's, and yet she was more original and and more creative than Eva Hubbock. But Eva, no, I think they were
their old companions.
Yes, old companions, companions in arms. They complemented each other. They got on very well.
That's fine. So. You've got that partnership going. Now, was Eva involved very much in Family Allowances in the association then?
I mean, I think so, yes. I don't quite know what she did.
You were in this office. Would you see Eva much at all?
Not a great deal. Of course, I saw her more when I was with the National Union.
Yes.
But as a matter of fact, I was left very much on my own, you know.
Yes, I was going to ask you that. Yeah. Are you anywhere near... You've got the job now, you're secretary. What's in this room, first of all? Presumably there are files of the Chronicle, aren't there?
Yes, which then was a little two-page sheet. We made it into a sort of thing that looked a bit with a green cover and things.
Presumably correspondence files.
Yes, a little bit of correspondence and membership, of course.
Yes, we were subscribers, wasn't it?
Yes, they didn't subscribe much, but... do you mind going sort of red herrings?
No, I like anything that me.
Just to show how green I was. With always short of money, of course. And it wasn't a thing that would appeal. You see, you weren't actually feeding children.
No, I quite understand.
However, I wrote round a circular letter to members, asking them for subscriptions and to help in any other way and so on. And I got a terribly nice reply from one of them. I thought, well, I must write to him as such a nice reply, and saying that he couldn't really afford, he got a lot of demands, he couldn't really afford a subscription. But he'd help us when and how he could, and speaking and so on. And I addressed the envelope, and for some reason or other I didn't post it. And I addressed the envelope to Mr. Ebor.